This is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. And you think I'm crazy, yeah, you think I'm crazy.
I wanted to fame, but not the cover of Newsweek.
7:36 on a Tuesday. Joining me is retired Marine Corps Brigadier General, alum of the United States Naval Academy, and a former member of the 5th Marine Regiment, is a former commanding officer of the 5th Marine Regiment, Tom Droughty. Sir, first of all, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Mac. Doing great. Thank you. Good to be with you again.
How are things in South Florida? Hot and humid?
Hot and humid. We've had a bit of rain a few weeks ago, but kind of drying off now. We appreciate the dry spell because I'm having a new roof put on my house, so when it's not raining.
There you go. There you go. It's always better to put a roof on when it's not raining.
You bet.
There you go. See, that's how you become a general officer. If you can figure stuff like that out, you got a chance to wear stars. Let me cut to the chase. Let me ask you a couple questions. If I told you, okay, Droughty, close your eyes, and I'm gonna assemble a team, and you tell me if we're more likely to go to war or we're more likely to have peace with North Korea. That team is going to consist of James Mattis as the Secretary of Defense. You're like, Mattis is SecDef. He can't. Law prohibits him. And I say, Droughty, just hang with me, okay? Hang with me. Okay, John Bolton as the head of National NSA. And you're going to have Mike Pompeo as your Secretary of State. And you're going to have a four-star general, Marine, as the Chief of Staff. That team, are you more likely to see conflict with North Korea or peace with North Korea? What would you tell me?
I would immediately say peace.
Okay. And because you're a smart guy, right? Because you would say these guys understand it. They get it. They know that history has taught us one lesson. If you don't want to fight, be strong. And
Also, remember that Pompeo is a West Point graduate,
right.
First
right.
class, so he has a military background in that regard. But in all of those individuals, I see that they certainly understand conflict. They've been involved in conflict. But in the case of Generals Mattis and Kelly, they have seen the results of conflict, and they understand that in the elements of national power, of diplomacy, information, military, and economics, the military should be the last resort.
Okay, now, if you're a member, if you weren't who you are, what would you say? I think most people would say we're more apt to have conflict. I think, you know, John Bolton in there, Jim Mattis in there, those guys, I think that the average person would have said, much of the media, like, we're going to war. And so, because I think, Tom, we, for whatever reason, we continue to have to learn this concept of peace through strength. And I don't rightly get it, but our alliances deteriorate. People don't contribute to, Germany doesn't have a military, for God's sakes. It's a joke. Germany makes Japan look good, and Japan struggles with their military and their military spending. And so we, for whatever reason, we have to learn these things, but that group, you know, on the heels of what happened yesterday, I'm curious about your thoughts.
Once again, Mac, we have a Secretary of Defense who, in the things that I've read that he's pronounced, has used diplomacy and the term diplomacy far more often than the thoughts of force. and has even stated that he'd be willing to give part of the defense budget to the Department of State in order to enhance and enrich diplomatic efforts. So, you know, the Mad Dog Mattis may play well to some pundits, but that is not the Jim Mattis that I know, and that's not the advice and counsel that he's providing to the president, nor is that what he's receiving from John Kelly, another great American. Both he and General Mattis have seen combat, they've seen war, and they follow the adage of Winston Churchill that talk, talk, talk is better than war, 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 and so we should expend every effort, as we have. Think of the economic efforts that have been extended against North Korea and the effect that they have had. You've got to realize that those efforts have had a result. North Korea, and I won't even go through how backward they are and how disabled they are economically, but, you know, I have to wonder when Kim Jong-un was walking around Shanghai and seeing, you know, a thriving, wealthy, benevolent Asian country, and to have to wonder, you know, the songs say, this nearly was mine, or this could be mine. I have to think that certainly has an effect on it. So, but getting back to, is it going to be war? I don't think so. And again, I'm confident in the advice and recommendations of the principal advisors to President Trump.
All right, give me your thoughts on the heels of first of all, as a veteran, I have to say that, and I said it a little bit ago, but at the end of the discussion, President Trump said the subject of the remains of American servicemen and women that are still in North Korea was brought up, and Chairman Kim, they said he agreed very quickly that the United States would be allowed to go ahead and recover those remains. As veterans, that's a big deal to us. That our heroes come home and be treated with the honor that they deserve. Your thoughts on that?
Oh, absolutely. And remember, that was one of the main points in the ceasefire agreement regarding Vietnam was that our POWs would become. That was, I think, one of the first points of issue. But yeah, it absolutely is the case that we have the ability to go in and recover those remains, bring them home, and bring that closure to their families after all these years. I think that's an absolute essential element, and I'm pleased that was a part and parcel of this initial meeting.
All right, Tom, give me your thoughts on what do you think about this deal? The words complete denuclearization are in this deal, and I think those of us who are grown-ups understand first step. So as a first step, are you underwhelmed? Are you encouraged? Where are you relative to this?
I'm very encouraged, and again, you correctly pointed out, in my opinion, it's a first step. There are still details to be provided, but think of the way that the pyramid is turned upside down. Normally, all of the details are worked out, and then finally the two leaders get together and work out, like, 10% of the final details. In this case, the two leaders have gotten together and basically put a mantle over what they want to accomplish, and that is, and it was stated, I think, unequivocally, the denuclearization of Korea, and with that, but a verifiable one that will go with it. So I think that's going to be the real key here, Mac, is that that's the goal, not only the denuclearization, but the irreversible denuclearization. So this adds to it a permanency that is more than just, well, we'll get rid of them for a while. But that requires, as President Reagan so prudently stated, you know, trust but verify. And the verification has got to be, you know, so much a part and parcel of whatever comes up from this. But getting back to your statement, I'm really encouraged that after years and years and months in Rudrick and barbs back and forth and so forth, that here we have the two leaders, United States and North Korea, with a handshake. And with that, that's a great start. I don't see how anybody can quibble with that. Now, sure, we have had a total agreement at that time. I think that's an unrealistic expectation because there's still details that you know must be worked out. But you know, what a great beginning, and I'm heartened by it, and I'm optimistic.
Well, you know, I was at the start of the show. I was reflecting on my own thoughts as I watched the press conference, and a year ago, my youngest son deployed with 3rd Battalion, 5th Marines, as a rifle platoon commander. And, you know, as a dad, given the fact that intercontinental ballistic missiles were being fired over Japan and Guam was being, you know, discussed as something that they would shoot near, the rhetoric,
yep.
You know, you're not a veteran that knows shit if the thought doesn't go through your head that I may not see him again. And if you don't sit down with him and say things like, hey, if you go to war, don't worry about getting killed. All right. It's out of your hands. Do your job and don't worry about that. You can't duck in time. You're not going to hear it coming. A discussion that I think a dad would never hope to have with his son, but you know, you have it with your son because you love him and you want him to be good at what he does, to take care of those underneath him and hopefully give him the benefit of some of your knowledge. But what a difference a year makes. And I want to ask you about the whole human rights thing. Whenever, for instance, you know, the president was asked in his press conference, you know, he's a brutal dictator. He's repressed his own population. You know, where does the human rights piece fit when we're talking about nuclear weapons?
Let me answer that in just a second. I was reflecting on your comments regarding your conversation with your son.
Yeah.
And I've had those conversations with my son and daughter. And it's interesting how your perspective on war differs dramatically when you're the warrior or the father of a warrior. When I was the warrior, I couldn't wait. And I say that, I guess, with shame. I couldn't wait to prove my mettle, to go to Vietnam, to do what I was trained to do and so forth. My family, of course, they're very concerned about me and so forth, as every family would be. Now, years later, I understand the anguish that they had of my tours in Vietnam as I was going off and doing what I was trained to do and wanted to do, but how much different that is from the perspective of a father watching his son or daughter go off and do those things. So I share with you that different perspective there, Mac, and you stated it well. Human rights, they have a role in this, and I think that it's got to be addressed. This is not something that can be ignored, but I think it's one of those things that in time that'll be reached. And if that becomes the first issue and becomes a stumbling block, then the other things that can come to pass are not going to come to pass. So I think there's a patience required in this. It's not to dismiss or diminish or to say that human rights are not important, but they will come about in time once these relationships between North Korea and the United States have developed and become stronger. And I think the more receptivity on the part of North Korea regarding human rights. But should that be the first thing out of the box? No, I just don't think that's smart baseball, to use that analogy.
You know, and it is difficult because people bring up emotional discussions like Otto Warmbier. You know, you see the three Koreans that were just released talking about their experience. And so it is emotional. But in my opinion, you know, you're talking about weapons that threaten Western Europe, that threaten Japan, our allies in the Pacific, and that threaten the mainland United States. And it's hard to say. But there is a concept called realpolitik, right? And that is, you know, we can't tell everybody how to live, right? And there's bigger fish to fry out there. And so, no, I share your sentiment. I want to ask you, the Iranians. Go ahead.
In fact, there's also a lot of other targets that are out there regarding human rights violations and targets of countries that we have relationships with. And so I guess to the purists, I would ask, does that mean that every country that doesn't have a pure and unblemished human rights record, that we should have nothing to do with them? This just doesn't make sense. It may make for good conversations, but in the real world, and again, you know, as a Catholic, as an American, you know, human rights are extremely important. I don't diminish those at all, but there's a larger, and you pointed out that very well, a greater necessity, and that is, you know, the threat of not just a few human rights violations, but human lives destruction that are at risk here, that have to be taken into account. And with time and with patience and with the experience that we've gained from one another, I believe that we'll get there. At least we're moving in the right direction.
Right, right. I want to ask you, I want to broaden the lens a little bit. We've got about 9 minutes left. The Iranians were watching this last night. As they watched it, Tom, what do you think the Iranians thought of that?
I guess I'm really an outlier in this regard. I still have hopes for the Iranians, and it goes back to the long period of time when we, in fact, were allies up until 1979, and then all that took place. And I share it's one of those kind of throwaway lines or a bit of an anecdotal observation, but after 9/11, what is the only Mideast country that had a memorial to the United States? Iran. You know, to think of that, of all the countries in the Mideast that had a lot to be concerned about after the attack on us on 9/11, Iran was the one that had the memorial. So I think that the people there still have a favorable feeling towards the United States. Their leaders do not, but the leaders, I think, over a period of time are becoming less and less effective and less powerful. So,
Tom, I think that most Americans, it's not the Iranian people, right?
Right.
It's that small militant minority that controls the nation that is impeding, you know, the Iranian, you know, populations. I think would like to go they'd like to, you know, they're, you know, many of them are pro-Western and they're very, I think if you read what comes out of there, they're very frustrated with their economy, with the jobs, with the way public pensions are working. It's not, and my point is it's not working. And so I think your point's well made. It's not the Iranian people.
Yeah. A major factor in that, Mac, is the role of women and how that was so dramatically diminished. I mean, prior to the revolution in 79, women had a major role. You know, so many teachers, doctors, lawyers, I mean, they're very, very much a role in the life, the government, the success of that country, and then to have that role diminished. So, you know, any country is kind of a different aspect that diminishes that role of women, and that applies to a lot of them in the world right now, does so at their distinct disadvantage. And I one time said that the definition of a feminist is the father of a successful daughter. So I guess I'm a feminist in that regard. But I also believe that any nation that diminishes the role, the position of women, does so at its own peril and it has its own disadvantage. And that's what I think Iran has experienced. And so I couldn't agree with you more. I think there is that possibility with the Iranian people. And we hope over a period of time that their leaders will change either willfully or perhaps by other means take place. But I think you're right. The folks at Iran were watching the whole world was watching this very closely, having heard all of the rhetoric that preceded it. And you're right, a year ago at the hitting Guam. I mean, all of those things that sounded, you know, so ominous now sound a heck of a lot better. You're right.
Well, you know, and my thought is, and I'd be curious to hear, is that, you know, the Iranian leadership, right, is watching and saying, you know what, the Americans just think that they found a recipe for success. And that recipe is very, very hard sanctions, followed by very, very tough rhetoric. And our attempt to, the Europeans have seen this too, and this is a big deal. This is a major breakthrough in a problem that a lot of people thought was not going to go away, and they've at least taken a first step. Our ability probably to wedge Europe away from the United States has probably taken a pretty large step backwards. The Americans' confidence that what they did in North Korea will work with Iran is probably increased. This is not good for us. Your thoughts on my reading of Iranian leaders watching television last night?
Yeah, they've got to be concerned to see the success that has been brought about, especially with the relationship that Iran has had with North Korea. So they're watching one of their, call it proteges, maybe not allies, but certainly compadres, now making, in many ways, a concession to the great saint, the United States. So this has got to be a tremendous in-your-face moment for Iran, for the leaders of Iran. But again, I think you're right for the people of Iran, saying, "Here's a new look of the United States. They certainly talk tough. We know they are tough, but they're also willing to negotiate. They're willing to meet halfway, to at least start off with a handshake and then see where it goes from there, rather than, you know, the contrary to that of the harsh words, the incidents that could lead to." You know, conflicts and then on to war. I think you've hit on something. Yeah, I think Iran is watching this very carefully, and I hope that there's a positive result from it. We can only hope.
All right, final question comes in the form of an email question. Mac, I'd be curious to hear General Droughty's thoughts on the follow-up to this. I feel really good that Mike Pompeo and John Bolton are a part of this, in addition to probably the most respected person in the Trump administration, Jim Mattis. I think that is a team of guys, Bolton's experience, Mattis's credibility around the world, Pompeo's smartness, especially after coming out of the CIA. I think we're in a pretty good position. I'd be curious to hear what the general thinks. General?
Yeah. It's a good synopsis and a good description of the current situation. The trick, and I say this with all respect to the president, the trick is having surrounded himself with some tremendous talent, and I couldn't agree more. Jim Mattis is one of the finest guys I've ever known, one of our battalion commanders in Desert Storm, and I from then just admired him, and an amazing individual. John Kelly, the same situation. I don't know Secretary Pompeo, but I know of him, and obviously a brilliant individual. And John Bolton, I've known from a little bit of the past. The trick, however, with surrounding yourself with good advisors is listening to them. Or, on the other hand, knowing when not to listen to them and following instincts. And the president has been very successful by following instincts. And I think there's a... For successful people, that combination of having expert advice, but then following that voice inside that at times can be counterintuitive, but that has served you well in the past. And I think we're in a good position right now with the personnel that we have, Mac.
All right. Well, sir, first of all, thanks for hopping on this morning. Always appreciate your sage-like advice. And good luck with the roof.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's coming along well, and no leaks so far, so we're in good shape. But I'll let you know how the classes on Vietnam are going. That's going to be fun.
All right, sir. Thank you very much.
All right, take care. God bless. Semper Fidelis.
Semper Fidelis. That is his call sign, is Sage. Notice how I weave that into the conversation. Yeah, when you get to be really, like, good at this like I am, you can do stuff like that. Anywho, or not. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Grant Newsham's going to join us. So we'll get Grant's thoughts on what he saw in terms of a first step. Long way from a year ago. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on a Tuesday on the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.